There is 1 month of regular season football left for Ohio State, and coming off of an off week, there is no better time to invest in the future. Welcome to the Beat on the Austin and Berm Show. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. So, with 5 games left for Ohio State, ramping up November, starting with Penn State.
Regular season games.
I thought I prefaced it enough.
Well, you never know how people are.
Okay.
Well, they're going to be like, come on, Austin, you said 5 games left. They can play 9.
I think that they probably will play 9, and that's a bold prediction for you out there. I believe that this team is going to win the national championship, but maybe we'll save that for another show, one that's actually prediction-based in reality. This is more of a fictional financial world that we live in, where I want to just pinpoint a couple players that are worth keeping an eye on, because the situation has really changed a lot, I think primarily at running back from game 1 through game 7. That depth chart in some ways has flipped entirely. So who could be some guys that you want to keep an eye on starting at the beginning of November who could play a significant role by the time Ohio State gets to the big house? So that's this week's Stock Watch.
That's this week's Stock Watch. That's what you just
said. That's what it's going to be like.
That's what this was going to be like.
Yeah, well, that's what it's going to be.
That's what it's going to be. We're going to talk about players who may develop into pretty important parts for November. You mentioned the running back. That's probably
stock down on me. Apparently, I just botched the entire intro.
No, I was just copying everything you said for fun. It obviously starts at running back, and that is something where I think it's interesting, because when the season started, Ryan Day spent so much time in the offseason and early parts of the season talking about eliminating assumptions, and like the running back depth chart was, for everyone's purposes, pretty much just an assumption. It was like, well, here's James Peoples, here's CJ Donaldson, he's got 2,000 yards, he was the heir apparent last year, these are the guys, and everything else will just fall into place. And then the games happened.
Well, that was the case against Texas. Right.
And then the games happened. And then you're like, wait a second, this is not how it actually feels best. And so here we are getting ready to enter November on Saturday. We'll see the calendar turn, and like it's turning in the backfield, because Bo Jackson is clearly the bell cow at this moment. And then what we saw the last time Ohio State was on the field was Isaiah West looking like the best running back on the field that day, ahead of Bo Jackson. So now I'm not saying that that's the case, but I think the entirety of the conversation has to have shifted. You cannot, in my opinion, and my opinion doesn't matter to the people here, I know, but I don't think it's good for the 4 guys in that room to think that they're all going to be splitting carries and all be playing all the time. Like there has to be a pecking order. There has to be some sort of game plan that says, hey, these are our dudes. You guys need to be ready, but let's go. These are the guys we're running with. And it looks to me, feels to me, like Bo Jackson and Isaiah West have shown something different than the other guys. So I think Isaiah West is the one that's a surprise, because he, you know, was getting a fourth quarter touchdown against Grambling State or whatever, and nobody really wanted to talk about him then because Bo Jackson had the 109 yards on 7 carries or whatever. But Isaiah West has actually been plodding right along the whole time.
Yeah, I think he's a really good example of the way Ohio State has managed the freshmen or first-time starters and brought them along without necessarily rushing, forcing them to do, like, you're adding a little bit at this level, and then the next week you can do a little bit more. That happened with Bo Jackson, and it happened maybe at a faster rate than anticipated. That's why the workload ticked up as dramatically as it did for him. And Isaiah West, that was a little bit different. We even saw him late in the Illinois game the week before Wisconsin. Yeah. It was like, I don't know, is that enough to ensure that he's going to get a role the following week? But it was dipping the toe in the water with consecutive carries. Okay, well, what can you learn from that? What is practice going to look like if you get more opportunities? Where are some things that you can improve? What are some, you know, some runs that are comfortable for you? And then the following week, it's 9 carries and it's 55 yards. And I know that that is a small sample. I know that it is recency bias. But once you get into those situations and you're productive, and Wisconsin is still like a very solid rush defense, like it carries weight. And then you have 2 weeks of practice between that. So if you've now got 2 months and you didn't maybe play in every single game for Isaiah West, but you have all of those practices built up, you have a level of confidence based on what you did against Wisconsin, and then the chance to cultivate that coming off of 2 extra weeks of practice, and then trying to project that towards the end of November, like the rate that both Bo Jackson and Isaiah West are growing, I did not envision that happening for either one, to be honest with you, in August. I didn't think that was in the cards for them.
I didn't think it was in the cards because I didn't think it would be necessary.
I think that's true.
You know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so obviously you start to see what Bo does. Isaiah is a little bit different situation because he wasn't even cleared to practice until July. So like he's coming along, I think probably faster than maybe Bo Jackson. Bo'd been here and healthy and running around since January. So I think in some ways Isaiah's rise is maybe even a touch faster, but I think it's also directly related to Bo's and saying, hey, we can, this is fine. Actually, we don't need to be spending all of our time worrying and going, oh, is this guy going to fumble? Is this guy going to fumble? So yeah. Now you have proof and now you can say, well, let's try the other one. And then the other one goes out and he's also dynamic. So it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. It is a good problem. Yes. But I do think it is a complicated one as well, because, and I, you know, we mentioned this last week, when we were asked if they could use all four, and you know, if they stay fully healthy, I don't think that there's a world where you can carve out roles for all four if you want. There are bright sides with C.J. Donaldson and James Peoples as well, but again, it comes down to the pace of play that Ohio State wants to play at, and that's going to be the one they use against Michigan. There's no way around that part. This is a conscious decision. I don't think they're going to get to game 12. And Ryan Day is all of a sudden going to go no tempo, no huddle, no up tempo for the entire game and throw it 50 yards, 50 times against Michigan in the Big House. So like you have to find out, I think, in the coming weeks, and maybe you don't get the truest evaluation against Purdue or UCLA or Rutgers, but you're trying to build that body of work now. You have four games before you go up there. Who are the ones that you want to rely on if it is 3rd and 2? On the 38-yard line, and you want to get it on the ground, or you need to get it on the ground. Is it going to be Bo Jackson? Is it going to be Isaiah West? Do you still feel like there are opportunities for C.J. Donaldson or James Peoples? I don't think you can fit all four into that pot, and I think two have to emerge. And I am now in a spot where I didn't think this could happen, where the true freshmen are the ones that may need to lead this ground game at the end of the year.
Yeah, and it goes back to that question of can they use four? Sure. Like, should they use four? That's a totally different conversation. Is it actually benefiting anybody to use four? That's another conversation. But clearly, you're not going to get a full accounting of what Isaiah West or Bo Jackson's long-term ceiling and potential are when you're playing Purdue, UCLA, and Rutgers. But you're still getting 5 Big Ten games in November, including a game against Penn State, which will obviously be tough, a game against UCLA, who's playing better, a game against Rutgers, who Greg Schiano, they know what to do on defense. They generally maybe don't have the horses to run with you for long, but they can scheme some stuff up. They can make it difficult. And then, of course, Michigan. So, like, it's not the ideal way the ideal litmus test, but 5 games in November for 2 freshman running backs, again, there's not a world that exists where we would have had that conversation 7 No. months ago. So it is impossible not to start this conversation about who unexpected risers more so than Isaiah West and even Bo Jackson to a degree. But I mean, how they go is somewhat tied into their offensive line play, right? So we talked about the Josh Padilla, Tegra Shibola conversation a little bit on Tuesday on Snap Judgment. So we don't need to like live in there, but.
Well, I do still think if I am talking about buying stock over the duration of 5 games in November, then I would be taking Josh Padilla because it's not even a matter of like ships crossing in the night or Tegra like going the complete wrong way. I think Tegra is right here on a plateau and he's giving a consistent level of play. And on the other side, you just see a takeoff from Josh Padilla and that at some point he will, his baseline, his floor will be higher than what Tegra's is. That's where I would bet right now. And I could be wrong about that. And if Tegra is able to go out there and he's got a fire lit under him, he responds to the challenge the way he did during the college football playoff a year ago, great. I'd love to see it. Yeah. I have no problem watching it. It would be great for Ohio State's run game. It'd be great for Julian Sain's pass protection. It'd be great for everything. It'd be great for the future depth if they don't have to necessarily throw Josh Padilla out there immediately. We've seen guys, you know, have to deal with the inconsistency once they become full-time starters or regulars in the rotation, if that's how Ohio State wants to manage it. I don't know how much more room for growth at this point in Tegra's career that exists.
Well, and that's the question.
I don't view it as an Achilles heel necessarily for Ohio State. I'm talking about tapping into the ceiling and the upside. And I think that there's a very good chance that could be Josh Padilla. That's not a prediction for Saturday against Penn State. We did talk about it on Snap Judgments. I think Tegra is going to start, but I think that the number of reps are going to continue to grow, and at some point in November, the starting lineup will change, and Josh Padilla will start.
This is the third season in which Tegra Shibola has been starting games for Ohio State. Okay, that's rare for an offensive lineman. It's not to say he is not capable of getting to the NFL and doing all the things, but what you see in the level of play from Josh Padilla when he's getting reps, it is getting better, and Tegra Shibola is not getting better. I'm not even going to sit here and say he's getting worse. I'm just saying
I don't think he's getting
this
worse.
This is what he is, and after 4 years of being in the program, like, this is what he is. So when you start to see even the little hints of someone else being able to maybe elevate the line to a different degree, then you have no choice as a coaching staff but to say, can we figure out a way to get that guy in the game? Because we don't live in that world anymore where you can just tell Josh Padilla, hey, man, keep waiting, because guess what? Maybe next year will be your year. What if Carson Hinsman comes back next year? Well, then all of a sudden, what's Josh Padilla's role? Like, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen. Cincinnati would love to have Josh Padilla back down playing for the Bearcats next year. So, like, you have
there's a lot of programs that would take.
You have to give these guys this opportunity when they've earned it, and Josh clearly has earned it. So, again, we don't need to spend too much time belaboring that point because it's been something we've talked about for 2 weeks. But, like, the comments from Ryan Day are not an accident. They are like, we see it. We all see it. So now you just have to figure out when is the best time to really flip the numbers.
It's similar in a lot of ways. This was the time a year ago where that conversation with Luke Montgomery started to change. And at this point, it wasn't a true necessity, but it was, you know, heading to Wrigley Field and playing Northwestern. You know, and Luke has talked about this, I think, publicly now, where he's like, he was frustrated. I need to know why I'm not getting on the field. Why am I not getting the opportunities? Why am I not starting? Why am I not in consideration for a starting job? And I was like, well, are you going to make the changes? Are you going to perform when you get into those rotational spots? And then it became, well, you know, Luke's right there. He's going to be that sixth guy. We're going to try and find ways to use his athleticism and talent and get him involved. And then it became a pivotal moment. Like, okay, what's going to happen? Now we're diving in with both feet. And even then, there were still some ups and downs. I thought he was really great throughout the playoff run, but not the finished product. Yep. There's still inconsistency now. And I think sometimes we've maybe glossed over that too much. Like, Austin Sereveld has missed a block or two. Everyone is going to. Yeah. Luke Montgomery has missed a block or two.
Luke's been a little boom or bust.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously that was true for Phillip Daniels. We talked about him a week ago. Like, you're not ever going to win 100%.
Yeah.
But I think that the success rate, you can find who's fifth, and then you have to be more open to, can number six elevate beyond that? And I think that doesn't mean it has to happen against Penn State. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I think the closer you get towards the playoff, where the true rubber is meeting the road and you can't afford to leave any stone unturned, I think that's when they'll have to make a decision and go with it.
And the beauty of that this year for Ohio State is you're not being forced to do it. You're not being injury riddled and then saying, oof, oh crap, we have to make these changes.
You got a piece of wood around
and
here?
Just see what happens. So that, I don't believe in superstition.
Oh.
Well,
are you a little stitious?
I'm a little stitious, but I like, this is the situation for Ohio State. Like, you have this opportunity, you've got talent and depth that you've been acquiring over the years, and now let's ride.
Okay. All right. So Josh Padilla, run game. Everything's tied up in the run game there.
Yeah.
I think do you want to go, or because I have another one
though. I have another one.
All right.
Should we say it on three?
Yeah, sure.
Three, two, one. Quincy Porter. No? Who are you going to say?
I'm safe. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm going to spoil it.
I don't know exactly what the role is for Quincy Porter, but it again, similar to the discussion about Bo Jackson and Isaiah West, it's like once you put the young guys out there, the first-year guys out there, and then they look like they belong,
yeah,
like that is an exhale moment for the coaching staff. Like, okay, we've worked for 10 months to get this guy to this moment. And now we're going to shove him out on the field, and he's going to let us know if he can sink or swim. And then you see in Quincy Porter's not just swimming, but looking like, oh, okay, maybe got something there. Because yeah. I'm not critical of Quincy Porter. I didn't know if he had the athletic juice that, like, the Jeremiah Smiths, the Carnell Tates do. And then you see it. And now you start to see it unfolding, and then the confidence comes, and then there's confidence from Julian Sain, there's confidence from the coaching staff. Ryan Hartline puts him out there, and all of a sudden it's like, yes, now – Ryan Day's been begging, essentially, for, like, someone else at wide receiver, and Quincy Porter quickly is now a guy that I think is becoming that conversation. It's not to gloss over Mylon Graham. Bryson Rogers comes back this week, probably. So I don't know how you work it out, but it's good to know that it's there.
Yeah, and I think it's it's tantalizing to consider some of the possibilities, because Carnell Tate was able to move into the slot and make some things happen immediately for Ohio State at Wisconsin. I know that there have been a lot of conversations about, you know, lining up Jeremiah Smith in multiple other places. And if you are able to get some flexibility and creativity with the scheme and personnel because of what Quincy Porter can give you on the outside, like that's all a bonus for Ohio State. Yeah. And I don't think that they have to, and they probably will not, live in a world where a fourth wide receiver is getting an equal share of reps compared to Brandon Ennis, Carnell Tate, and Jeremiah Smith. Like that's,
but they don't need to.
Either. They don't need to. That's not going to happen, and it wouldn't be to the overall benefit. But again, you're talking about potentially playing 9 more games. Like there are a lot of reps that are going to be available to Ohio State players, and there's a lot of need to continue to evolve on offense. Like, yeah, maybe if you get to be playing whoever in the semifinal, you're not even going to consider putting a fourth wide receiver out there unless you absolutely have to. Like that's because your ceiling is highest with Jeremiah, Carnell, and Brandon Ennis on the field.
And 7 tight ends.
And maybe you don't do that.
Let's hold your last guy till Thursday. And have that lead off your 3 thoughts Thursday.
You want to?
Let's, I mean, why not?
Okay, well, I don't know.
I don't, here's the thing. They want us to leave.
They do want us to leave.
And I feel bad if we don't. So Austin's going to hold that thought.
Okay.
Until Thursday. Oh, do you want to give a teaser? Before?
Going back to the defensive line.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Someone that we had a lot of stock in early in the year.
Uh-huh.
There was a sell-off.
My guy, Edrick.
But we're going to load back up, and I'm going to talk about why. What I've seen, what I've been hearing, just a little Edrick Houston vibes.
Yeah.
So you'll stick around for that. In the meantime, there will be snap judgments on Wednesday evening in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. Can't wait to get back into that, as this week is going fast. It feels great to be back in Columbus for a game week, a matchup game against Penn State. Ryan Day said it, and I take that at face value. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. A quick stock watch on a Wednesday on the beat. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again later.
This summer, the world's best tennis players are coming back to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati Open returns August 8th through the 23rd. Bigger than ever, with new fan spaces, incredible food, drinks, and entertainment all in one place. Voted Tournament of the Year by the players themselves. Community Weekend starts August 8th. Finals weekend, August 22nd and 23rd. Get your tickets now at CincinnatiOpen.com.